What's going on, everybody? Welcome into the Lakers Outsiders Podcast. I am Gary Kester, joined as always, well, not always, but mostly all the time by Hani Amadi. And Hani, how you holding up in the summer heat?
I am about to die in the heat right now. It is about 100 degrees where I am. But most importantly, I'm being kept alive by the fact that there are two Nevada alums in the Lakers organization now. Which I believe is more than Boise State has, I think, if you can confirm.
Well, we had some stuff we were going to talk about, but that's going to be it. We're done. Oh, my God. Okay. Yeah, no. It's been a while since we've done a pod. This is the last one we did was the day before free agency. And a lot has happened since then. The Lakers actually have a full roster. They have open roster spot. We can talk about that in a little bit, but yeah, a lot has happened since the last time we talked. It's been kind of a crazy month, just for the league in general, for the Lakers especially. The Lakers were after Kawhi Leonard, like we talked about in the last pod. There was a lot of waiting that happened, and the Lakers didn't get him. The team that ended up getting him, I think, was the team that most people counted out. Because it didn't look like there was an avenue for them to pair him with a star. And that seemed to be kind of the thing you had to do to get Kawhi Leonard this offseason. And the Lakers had two of those in place, but it wasn't enough, apparently. And Kawhi Leonard signed with the Los Angeles Clippers. Hani, what was your reaction? I mean, how surprised were you that not only did Kawhi pick the Clippers, but that they were able to swing that trade for Paul George as well?
Well, my number one concern in the moment was not crashing my car with two other people in it, because that's where I was when I heard the news in Las Vegas for Summer League. After that, though, it was pretty shocking. I mean, we talked about it earlier that, you know, as free agency got closer, we felt more and more confident that Kawhi might sign with the Lakers, which was something that we didn't think was even remotely a possibility, really, a month before free agency happened. But, you know, the fact that the Clippers were able to swing that trade for Paul George ultimately was the biggest part of this. They, you know, a lot of people kind of considered them the favorites to get Kawhi during the season. And that changed a little bit as the offseason started. But, you know, he obviously wanted to return home to SoCal. But getting that second guy in Paul George, somebody who was a legitimate MVP candidate for most of the season last year, was huge for the Clippers. And, you know, it's not really shocking that Kawhi would want to go to the Clippers. You know, obviously a hometown team, and, you know, the fact that they really have done everything pretty much correctly over the last couple of years. Every decision that they've made has worked out for them. They've been really stable. They've been really good at keeping things under wraps and away from the media as much as possible, which is something that the Lakers have done a really poor job of doing. So I think it makes sense that even if the Lakers had the potential to build a super team with Kawhi and getting three stars that, you know, would ultimately be the favorites in the league, regardless of how they built the team around them, really, I think. He was willing to choose a team that had only one other star, but was in a little bit more of a stable position and somewhere where he thought he could probably stay out of the spotlight a little bit more, be a little more drama-free, and still compete for titles.
Yeah, the Paul George trade just completely changed the equation, you know, on that free agency, that whole free agency dynamic. A lot of people were just waiting for him to make a decision, and it was really dragging out more than I think people wanted, and everybody was kind of waiting on edge. And of course, the one night that I went to bed early thinking, oh, he's not going to decide tonight, he made his decision finally. And one of the most, you know, biggest bombshells that the league has seen in a while, newsworthy wise, you know, happens while I'm passed out, you know, and asleep. And I woke up in the middle of the night, like 3 a.m, thinking that I was having like a really weird NyQuil dream, because I was not feeling good that night. So, yeah. And I was just like, holy crap, like this is real. Yeah, it's crazy. It brings a lot of balance to the league, which as a basketball fan has me really excited, because there's not really, I don't think there's really anybody that has like three superstars or three like all-star caliber players ready right from the jump, right? The Warriors kind of do, but Klay Thompson's going to be out for a while because of his torn ACL. Yeah. So there's so much balance in the league. I think really this makes it so that there are seven teams in the West that are legit contenders to win the conference. And I don't think, you know, I think maybe the separation from 1 to 7 is pretty slim. So seeding in the playoffs, I think, is going to be less important than health. You know, exactly. I wouldn't be surprised if you see like the 6th seed in the West, you know, win the conference and go to the NBA finals. I think all the teams are very, very close to one another, and it's just going to depend on who's healthy and who's playing good ball at the time. But there were a lot of reports on Kawhi that if the Clippers didn't swing that trade for Paul George, he was probably going to pick the Lakers. There was also a lot of talk about Magic leaking basically the details of his meeting with Kawhi, and that kind of sealed the Lakers' fate of not getting him. How much of all that stuff are you buying? Do you think Kawhi was kind of, you know, had his mind made up for the Clippers or the Raptors, or do you think that Magic kind of screwed the Lakers over on that?
I find it really hard to believe the Magic bit of that. Like, I don't think Magic helped by saying anything about the meeting, and, you know, obviously that's something that was important to Kawhi. But we should mention that, A, he's already talked about it and refuted that and said that, you know, Magic talking about it didn't really change my opinion. The biggest thing that really changed his plans was the Clippers being able to get that second guy, which to me kind of shows that he wanted to be on the Clippers from the start. He just probably wanted to make sure that he had the help that he needed. He obviously knows from what happened in Toronto that he can win a title being the guy and having a team of really good role players, but not necessarily a second star. But given his health concerns over the last couple of years, it's, you know, I think pretty obvious that he wanted a second guy that could help manage the load as, you know, Kawhi does. So I think the biggest thing for him was just that trade happening. And I do buy that the Lakers were probably his second choice just because it seems like he wanted to be back home in LA. But I don't know how much that matters, frankly. It just seems like he was kind of trying to avoid going to the Lakers if he were to come home, by, you know, basically giving the Clippers the key to getting him and saying, find me a second guy, whoever it be. And I'm signing with the Clippers pretty much.
Yeah. It's crazy that, you know, how long everybody kind of had to wait for Kawhi's decision. And a lot of people think that the Lakers also were kind of hurt by having to wait because, you know, all their cap space was tied up waiting for Kawhi because, you know, he would have taken all the cap space they had available. And then they would have had to fill out the roster with the room exception and then some minimum deals, even though I think with those three in the fold, it probably would have been not overly simple, but fairly simple, I guess. I think a lot of players would have played for cheap, but instead they had cap space to use. So do you think that the wait for Kawhi hurt the Lakers at all? Or do you think that they ended up maybe in a way kind of better off?
I don't think you can really argue that it didn't hurt them. They missed out on some pretty valuable role players that they could have gotten to shore up their depth a little more than they did. Having said that, though, I think they did a pretty fine job. They got the best, I think, free agent left after Kawhi was probably Danny Green, and they were able to get him. And they got a lot of depth in a lot of different places. And depending on what they do with that last spot, which seems like they're keeping it until the buyout market kind of becomes a thing later on in the season, and they'll try to use it then, they can go into the playoffs with a pretty solid roster. They obviously have their two superstars in LeBron and AD, but, you know, whatever growth Kuzma has, however DeMarcus Cousins kind of comes back from his injury problems and whether he does well, Danny Green, and then just a collection of other guys, I think they're in a really good position. I think before free agency started, it was a pretty common debate about whether it made more sense to go after a superstar, a third superstar, or to divvy up all that cap space between role players. And I think the consensus was that for somebody like Kawhi, you absolutely wait and see if you can get him, mm-hmm. because he just changes the outcome of your team so much, because he's arguably, you know, the best player in the league and the reigning finals MVP. But, you know, for anybody else, you would have done the depth thing. So I don't think the Lakers necessarily made a mistake waiting on Kawhi. But I also don't think you can argue that it didn't hurt.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's one of those kind of weird situations where it hurt the Lakers because they, you know, missed out on some guys, some good quality players they could have gotten with their cap space. But it also saved them from giving out some bad deals like Trevor Ariza for 2 years, $24 million, you know. So a lot of role players got paid, and I'm kind of glad the Lakers aren't strapped to really many bad contracts. Everything's kind of 2 years, besides the star players. So that's a good thing. That's a good thing. So, all right. So let's kind of talk the makeup of the roster. Still one open roster spot, like I mentioned earlier. But the Lakers have put together a nice little roster and, has fans excited. And I think it's put the Lakers in the mix in the Western Conference. Obviously the Lakers have, I mean, they have the best duo in the league, right? And Anthony Davis and LeBron James.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. I think so. I mean, with Durant out probably all of next season, I mean, you could probably argue the Lakers have two top five players on their roster. So, that's huge. That's huge. But what did you think of the way they filled out the rest of the roster?
I think overall they did a pretty good job. You know, like I was saying, Danny Green, I think, was the best remaining free agent at the time that they got him. Obviously they were fortunate that he was waiting all along to see what Kawhi's decision was going to be before he made his own. So getting him was huge. Getting DeMarcus Cousins, even if he is sort of a reclamation project, you don't really know exactly what you're going to get from him, but he's a former All-Star, and if he's even at 80% of the level that he was the last time he was playing with Anthony Davis before he tore his Achilles, that's a huge get, in my opinion. And I think, you know, some of the depth pieces, like bringing back Alex Caruso and JaVale McGee, I think were really good additions. Or really keeping them. But and then Quinn Cook, I think, is another guy that might fly under the radar a little bit, but he's another dude who can spread the floor and run the offense a little bit, and hopefully play a little bit of defense as well. So I think, you know, there's a few decisions that I had issues with, and I would have preferred other options. But as a whole, I think this was a much better job of filling out their roster around their superstar players than they did last year, which obviously is a low bar given how last year went. But seeing that improvement from the front office is pretty encouraging. And overall, I think this is a team that definitely should be contending for a title this year.
Yeah, definitely. I think they've put enough around their superstars to really contend for a title. And like I said, at least be in that mix, because I think it's, if you just get into the playoffs healthy in the Western Conference, you know, there's a handful of teams that have a legitimate shot, like we said at the start. And to me, you know, I've been pretty hard on Rob Pelinka, I think, the past couple of years, just, you know, from the off court stuff and kind of how they handled last off season after they got LeBron, and just some stuff along the way. I think he earned a little more credit this off season. I think he did a really nice job of filling out this roster and really emphasizing shooting. And it kind of maybe shed some light on Magic's thought process and decision-making as an executive last off season, and that it just might not have been great. You know, cause at the end of the day, he was kind of the boss, right? Like every decision went through him. And so I wonder if Pelinka wasn't fully on board with the approach last off season, but I'm just glad to see it changed. And, you know, the Lakers kind of emphasize shooting instead of, you know, a ton of playmakers. Obviously you want both, but, you know, they got some shooters, they got, you know, some guys that can defend. Obviously Anthony Davis, if Davis and JaVale are, on the court together, I mean, good luck scoring in the paint against those two. Right. But Yeah, I really, really like the makeup of this roster. You mentioned Danny Green. I think he's such a perfect fit for what he's going to be playing alongside. You know, when they have like a lineup of him with Kuzma, LeBron, AD, and whoever, you know, he's, I feel like he's the most reliable shooter the Lakers have had in quite some time. Like a guy that when he gets open, when he's left open from three, you truly think it's going in.
Yeah.
Right. And you're not just hoping. Because he was an elite catch and shoot guy, an elite 3-point shooter in general last year. And he's going to have a lot of those same looks playing off of LeBron and Anthony Davis. So there's definitely a lot on this roster to work with for Frank Vogel and his staff. And I'm excited to see how it pans out because this is the best roster that they've had in quite some time. And I mean, if they can finally stay healthy for once, you know, I think I'm going to say that probably all year is that health is going to be so important because I feel like LeBron is kind of taking note. Like a lot of people are kind of counting him out. And I mean, I get it. Like he's going to be 35 in December. So he's getting up there in age. But he's got, I mean, Anthony Davis is probably what, the second best teammate that he's ever had?
I think so. Yeah. After Dwayne Wade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was talking besides Alex Caruso, but, but yeah, I think the pieces fit really well. And like you said, the DeMarcus Cousins thing, and I'll touch on him, more here in a second, but, who was the, I guess it's probably a player we've already mentioned, but who was the one guy, we'll each do this, but who's the one guy, the one signing that you probably like the most?
So I think there's a lot of risk that comes with this one, but the ceiling is huge, and I think it's DeMarcus Cousins. I really love that signing. At the contract and salary that they're giving him, they're basically just giving him an opportunity to kind of prove that he's back from that Achilles injury and the quad injuries that he had in the playoffs last year. He's a guy who, you know, that Achilles injury really is a bummer for pretty much every NBA player. It's really, really hard to come back from that. But if he can get back to the level or even close to the level that he was before it, he is a legitimate, you know, superstar level player in the NBA. He's somebody that has already worked really well with Anthony Davis, who, as we all know, prefers playing the power forward position, at least in the regular season. So he can eat up a lot of minutes at the center spot along with JaVale. He can be the hub of your offense. I kind of prefer to have him playing off the bench because I think JaVale kind of fits better with the starting lineup as a defensive kind of guy in the middle. But if he is coming off the bench, he can be basically the dude that you throw the ball into every single possession. And whether he's bullying guys in the post and scoring or passing out of double teams, which is something he is incredibly good at and something that the Lakers haven't had probably since Pau Gasol left. I think he can be a huge, huge addition for the Lakers. If, again, there's a lot of ifs that come with this because that injury is no joke. But if he can get anywhere close to it, then that is just a tremendous level of talent to have on the team.
Yeah, well, one thing I'm very encouraged about with him already is you could notice the weight loss in his first, like, TV interview that he did with Chris McGee, I believe. Yeah, he looks like he's slimmed down and looks like he's really gearing up to, you know, get ready to go. And
yeah,
like you said, the contract that they got him on, I think, is so huge because that's such incredible value, right? I mean, absolutely. Basically getting him on a minimum type deal.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's something you got to pull the trigger on. And at the very least, I mean, even if he doesn't play well, which I do expect him to play well, because I think it's year two after his Achilles surgery. He came back in the middle of last season, right? Because he was out for a while. And, you know, he's going to have a full off season to work on his game again and, you know, get his conditioning up and get, you know, kind of go through training camp and acquainted with his new roster and all that. And it's not going to be one of those things where he's just thrown out there in the middle of, you know, a regular season game.
Yeah.
So and I think just year two post-surgery, I would expect him to be a lot better.
And last year, he wasn't bad last year. He was pretty productive. He was just a little inconsistent. There were games where he looked like old Boogie that was kicking butt in Sacramento and New Orleans. And then there were games where he kind of looked lost out there because his physical condition wasn't good enough to be playing against other guys. But I think if that inconsistency issue is kind of fixed, then yeah, he is like a perfect sort of addition, again, at that salary.
I mean, Kyle Kuzma saw him like look pretty healthy on that dunk that he had at Oracle. That was kind of nasty. But yeah, I mean, at the very least, even if Cousins doesn't play well, he's probably just being on the team and playing next to Anthony Davis is going to keep Davis happy, right? Which the Lakers, I mean, need to do, even though I think it would be unlikely if AD went elsewhere after next season because his contract is up. I don't think he would leave LeBron behind and, you know, leave Los Angeles. But you never know. You never know. Everybody said the same thing about Dwight. So it's always possible. But I think at the very least, DeMarcus Cousins probably at least keeps Anthony Davis happy this year because they're friends and Davis has wanted to reunite with him. And so there's that dynamic to kind of keep in mind too. And I think that's at the very least going to be a positive thing to keep your superstar happy. So the one signing I love the most, maybe I'm biased as a North Carolina fan, but I love Danny Green. I've wanted him to be a Laker for, I don't know, 5-6 years now, really ever since he emerged on the scene back with, you know, with San Antonio was when he kind of really broke out and kind of really found a role for himself where he could be really effective and saw a lot of effective minutes in the playoffs and in the NBA finals, knocking down 3-point shots, playing good defense. And I love the fit. I love that it's a 2-year deal because he is kind of starting to get up there in age. Been in the league 10 years now. So I love the structure of the deal. It's a very tradable contract if he does fall off a cliff, which I think is important. I think the Lakers are still going to get high production out of him in the role that he's going to give them. Gives them an elite shooter, great defender, and that's exactly what they need on the perimeter. So I love that signing.
Yeah, and I mean, given the NBA Twitter discourse, we all know that he's going to get open a lot since apparently it's okay to leave him open from the 3-point line.
You got to live with that.
Yeah, you got to live with it, man. Danny Green does not kill you from three, even though he shot 45% from there last year.
He was only in the 99th percentile as a 3-point shooter last year.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. And I think, I mean, even with those two, with Green and Cousins, an interesting thing that it kind of allows the Lakers to do, and an interesting thing with how the roster's been built, where I think the Lakers have, you know, the ability to play small and big, because I think Davis, you know, I don't think he wants to play the five. I mean, he's pretty much said that he doesn't like to play the five. But I think the Lakers are going to have some effective lineups where he is at the five. But they can also kind of go with your traditional big lineup with LeBron at the three, and with Davis, and then you could put McGee or you can put DeMarcus Cousins next to Davis. And if you do that, you know, you, like I said, you have that traditional big lineup, basically. You have size up front, so you won't get crushed on the glass. You might be able to block some shots, you know, kind of defend the paint and all that. But also you can still have adequate floor spacing. You know, even if you have LeBron at point and Danny Green is at the two or the three or whatever, and you have those two bigs, all four of those guys can step out and knock shots down from the perimeter. So it gives the way the roster was built, and I think that Rob Pelinka hasn't gotten a ton of credit for, is that it's very versatile. You know, it looks kind of traditional, but it's very versatile, and I think that'll give Frank Vogel a lot of different lineup combinations that he can do, and I think we'll see him kind of experiment with that early on in the season. But I'm excited because I really like the makeup of the roster. It's not perfect, but I mean, no roster in the league is. So, it's a good roster. I'm excited to see how they gel, and I'm excited to see how LeBron and Anthony Davis can lead this team. But all right, so I feel like this is the most positive we've been on a pod in a while. but all right, so we got to be a little negative here. We got to be a little real. What was the signing that you probably didn't like the most?
Being negative is my forte. I guess I would say the one that I questioned the most, and there were a couple that I didn't really, really love, but the one that I questioned the most was giving Avery Bradley the room exception. Avery Bradley, last year with the Clippers, there's no way of saying it other than he was awful. He wasn't a good defender, which is what his calling card has been. He didn't score well. He didn't shoot the ball well. And as an undersized guy, there's not much else he can do. He finished the year pretty strongly once he was with the Grizzlies. But that was only about a 14 game stretch, where he put up pretty good numbers, but it's really hard to put a lot of stock in that when he was playing on a bad tanking team. And, again, it was just such a smaller sample size. And the other thing with that is, so a lot of people are now saying because he was good with the Grizzlies for that short stretch, maybe it was just an issue with how the Clippers used him, and maybe he can go back to being the old Avery Bradley. One, I don't think he's going to be back to that level that he was in Boston. I just think he's gotten a lot older, has had a lot of injuries, and when you have a drop off that drastically to where he was with the Clippers, it's hard for me to believe that you're going to go all the way back. And the number two thing is, I never really considered Avery Bradley as good as a lot of people did. I think he was always a little bit overrated as a defender. He's a solid shooter, but nothing extraordinary.
He was definitely overrated as a Celtic. I think he was fine everywhere else.
Yeah, everybody is overrated as a Celtic, especially Enes Plan A Kanter. To me, peak Avery Bradley is sort of like a poor man's Patrick Beverley, and I'm not sure if he's even good enough to be that. And the opportunity costs of getting him at that money when you could have had a bigger wing defender, which is something that I think that is the biggest issue on this roster right now, is that they basically have Danny Green and whenever LeBron feels like it to guard wings, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And I think they really desperately need a wing defender, which I know they're hoping for Andre Iguodala eventually, but if he doesn't get bought out or if somebody trades for him or whatever, they really do need another guy. And I look at somebody like Justin Holiday, who got signed a little bit after Bradley for, I think, less money, if I remember correctly. And it's kind of disappointing that that money went to Avery Bradley when it could have gone to him, or it could have gone to, Tabo Cephalosha, who's still available or whatever. So I think, to me, the opportunity cost and combining that with just him not being as good of a player as he used to be, I think Avery Bradley was the worst signing of the season, of the offseason.
See, I was actually fine with the Bradley deal. I mean, I didn't like the price tag. I will agree on that. I thought giving him the full room exception was kind of a lot, because I just don't, in terms of money, I think Cousins is going to bring more value. And he signed for less than Bradley did. So it's a little weird when you kind of think about it that way. I know Bradley had really struggled last year, and I'm kind of on the same boat as you, is I'm not really putting a ton of stock into those Memphis minutes, because he was on a bad team. It could just be empty stats on a team that was tanking. But I will say it's going to be a different situation for him, because even though the Clippers were a good team, they didn't really have those star players, like the superstars that the Lakers have, that he's going to be able to play off of. And I think that makes the game a lot easier for guys. Avery Bradley reportedly has lost a lot of weight, 40 or 50 pounds, I think.
Insane, by the way, because he is not a big dude. I don't know where he lost that 40 pounds from.
Yeah, I mean, since April, when the season ended, that was 3 months. That's a pretty quick
time frame to lose a lot of weight like that. So, I mean, maybe he's finally healthy. I mean, I did kind of look at his injury history the past couple of years, and he did kind of have a lot of injuries that were reported. So maybe now that he's healthy, maybe he can kind of get back, because he's not, I mean, he's definitely getting older. But I don't think he's like old enough to where he's going to drop off the way, I mean, he kind of has, right?
Yeah.
So I think he can bounce back. I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't, because who knows, maybe he has dropped off and maybe it just happened at an earlier age than it does for most players. But I think that he can fill a role with this team. I think he can bounce back, and I think he can be a solid contributor, even though I think the Lakers might have overpaid for him. So
yeah. And I mean, like, you're right. Offensively, I don't think he should be much of an issue as long as he can basically just hit threes. Mm-hmm. Like, he's not going to be a playmaker. LeBron is basically playing point guard. Avery Bradley just has to be there to defend other point guards and shoot threes. So if he can at least shoot threes, then he's, you know, he provides some value that way. And hopefully his defense kind of picks up a little bit over what it was last year, to where he's not as much of a liability.
Yeah, him and KCP, I think, are going to have basically the same role.
Yeah, right? Pretty much, yeah.
I mean, it's going to be a simplified role, and who knows? Frank Vogel is a good defensive guy, so hopefully, you know, scheme-wise, kind of sets the Lakers up for success in that area. So I'm optimistic about the Bradley deal than most. Not the price, but just him as a player. I think he can bounce back, and I'm excited to see what he does. I mean, if not, you know, it's not the end of the world, but it would be a big help if he does, you know, have a bounce back season for the Lakers. The one deal I didn't like, and anybody that follows me on Twitter probably already knows this answer, but Rajon Rondo, I don't understand the attraction to Rondo. I get it. He was reportedly a really good teammate last year, and you know, that stuff is important. I think it was especially important with a young team. And, you know, I don't want to overlook all that stuff, because I think, like I said, it is important. But I just think his skill set now, I mean, there was a time where Rondo was very, very good, but he hasn't played defense in a number of years. It's funny, somebody tweeted out kind of that crazy sequence that the Lakers had in their season opener against Portland, where LeBron had that steal and that breakaway dunk, and then Lillard had the dunk on the next possession, and then LeBron got it quickly and went the other way and had the other dunk. And Lillard's dunk was because he just waltzed right around Rondo. And it's just kind of an encapsulation of what he is defensively now. He just doesn't really give the effort that I'd like to see on that end. And then offensively, I mean, I just don't trust him as a shooter. I think teams are going to dare him to shoot. And just with the makeup of the roster, I just didn't see the fit, you know, with Caruso, Quinn Cook, and LeBron basically as your point guards, because they've already said LeBron's going to play point guard. I don't see, because to me, Caruso is better than Rondo. Yeah. And Quinn Cook can at least shoot the ball. Yeah. And I think they're probably about equally as bad defensively. I mean, Cook might try a little more, but yeah, I don't like the fit of Rondo, but I think it probably keeps LeBron happy. And like I mentioned for Cousins, keeping Anthony Davis happy, Rondo probably has that same effect on Davis as well, because they played together with the Pelicans and actually swept the Portland Trailblazers in that first round playoff series. So I still don't like it. I mean, it was a 2-year deal. So, I'm like, man. I don't know. I just think that there are better options already on the roster that should play ahead of him. So I don't.
Yeah. I mean, I generally agree with you. I don't really like the signing either, especially because of that kind of like bad taste that he left in our mouths last year because of how poorly he played. I guess I reserve judgment a little bit, because I'm hoping that, you know, the fact that Caruso and Cook both got, I think they both got paid more than Rondo did. Mm-hmm. Maybe that hopefully means that the Lakers also kind of believe that they're better and that they should play over him. So if Rondo's a dude who's going to be on the bench and he's just going to be a locker room guy and he's going to be sort of a coach, basically, and then just be a breaking class, break in case of emergency sort of option, and you know, if there's injuries, that's fine. I'm okay with that. But if he's playing over Caruso, playing more than Caruso, and probably playing more than Cook, then that's, you know, that's an issue.
Yeah, if he's an assistant coach that just gets to wear a jersey, then that's fine. Like, I'm totally okay with that. He can, you know, help coach guys, and it's good to get that kind of that coaching voice from a player. So
you can bake them cookies too.
Yeah, apparently he is quite the chef. Makes sandwiches and cookies, and so yeah, I mean, I'll give him credit for that. I mean, I'm hungry just thinking about it. So yeah, it's just going to depend, I think, really, for a lot of guys on the roster. It's going to depend on how the Lakers use them and what their role is. And we're going to, I think the starting lineup is going to tell us a lot about the current coaching staff and Frank Vogel's kind of line of thinking. Right. So, because there's a lot of different ways they can go, and we'll talk about that at another pod. And we'll also talk about the empty roster spot. Cause I think, I guess we can just touch on it real quick. Cause I don't know exactly how you feel about it, but if we had our choice, it would probably be Andre Iguodala, right?
Yes, absolutely. Like, okay. I think Andre Iguodala would literally fix every problem that the Lakers currently have on their roster. He gives them a wing defender, and he gives them another playmaker off the bench. Like, that's perfect.
Yeah, that's – I was just going to say, my outlook on the season, like, changes kind of dramatically if they're able to get him. But we need Memphis to stop holding him hostage. Yeah. Memphis, you're tanking. I know you want veterans, but come on. Let him go for his benefit and my benefit. Exactly. And I will travel to Tennessee again next year, and I'll go see a Titans game, even though it's in Nashville and not Memphis.
You can spend money in your economy. I will buy, I don't know, barbecue or something for somebody without going there because I don't have that sort of money, but I'll buy it for somebody else.
Honey will Venmo me like $15 to have a nice barbecue lunch while I'm in Nashville to see another Titans game.
Exactly. There we go. Deal. Done.
That's a fair trade.
Signed, sealed, delivered. Let's go.
Hey, we're getting deals done. I mean, I don't know why we're not in the front office. Like, we're making trades already.
We'll have Dylan back on the podcast to sing Walking in Memphis if you guys buy him out before the season starts.
Dylan's got to take one for the team. Yeah, we're finding a way to circumvent the CBA and the salary cap. So, all right. Yeah, we've got a lot of topics that we're going to talk about throughout the offseason. I know the offseason gets kind of dry, and, you know, it's the end of July, and training camp is really about 2 months away. So there's going to be, I guess, a lot of dry time before training camp rolls around, preseason and all that. So, but we'll try and do our best to fill the void. I apologize for taking 3.5 weeks or so to get this pod out from the last one. Free agency and everything was crazy. And, my schedule's been crazy. I know Hani, your schedule's been crazy. So yeah, we'll try not to do that again, but we've got some stuff lined up that we want to talk about on the podcast. And as always, if you enjoy the pod, you can subscribe to us on YouTube, on iTunes, Podbean, and on Spotify. You can find all of our content on LakersOutsiders.com. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook. And yeah, this was fun. It was fun getting back on here, and hopefully we're on again here soon. Hani, I want to thank you for spending part of your Friday evening with me, and hopefully you, you know, get to a place with some colder air, and you're able to rest easy at a more normal temperature.
I might fly to Memphis right now.
I heard they're having a cold front right now. So, all right. Well, thank you guys so much for listening. Hani, thanks again for joining me. And for Hani Amadian, I am Gary Kester with the Lakers Outsiders, signing off.
Shout out Mike Pemberthy.